It's time again for the Scotty Johnny Podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam. Talking Wisconsin sports, two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what he read on Twitter. With music by Duluth Greats, Cars and Trucks, here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny Podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett, Scotty Johnny himself, and with me, as per usual, is Aaron Flottam.
Hi, John. How was Buffalo Wild Wings?
It was everything I ever dreamed it would be. I mean, since I've been there before, I kind of have it down. They have those nice little tablets for the kids to get distracted with.
It's the best. We learned that this last weekend.
Oh,
it's
the
best place to bring kids. Like, I never noticed because I was used to go over to the bar part when I was a bachelor. But, you know, I've got a 6 and a 4-year-old now. It's the best thing ever. Here's a tablet, 55 TVs. I'm going to eat a Nashville chicken sandwich. Let's do it. Hey, Buffalo Wild Wings, by the way, if you want to sponsor us, give me a call.
Yeah, we're not putting our numbers out on the line, but you can reach us. we'd be great for this because I would do it just for free wings.
I would do the podcast from Buffalo Wild Wings. How about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would drive to where you are to do that. Yeah.
Why not? Let's do it.
The other fun thing is it's a little crazy in there because we're at Buffalo Wild Wings, and of course Monday Night Football's on, but so is the Bucks game. Is figure skating and MMA. Women's MMA.
Wow.
It was
what a spread. That is a spread.
Yeah. And there was like a women's golf show on for a little bit too, which was interesting, but I don't like golf generally. But yeah, the figure skating came on after the gymnastics competition ended. So I was like, oh, cool, gymnastics. Then I saw figure skating and I was like, I thought this was a sports place.
We had a good one on Friday night. We took the kids out on Friday night. They both had really good parent teacher conferences, and so we went with we got the spread of there was the betting show on ESPN2, where they talk about all the lines and stuff like that. So I was watching that, and then degenerate gambler style. And then there was rugby and lacrosse on.
Oh, those are fun.
Ah, two sports I would love my kids to play.
They're both fantastic.
Nothing against football, but it's a dangerous sport. Anyways, let's talk about it.
It's better than soccer, which gives far more concussions than football, statistically speaking.
And anyhow, it's boring.
That too. Second point.
I say that, but I was at a World Cup match over in Germany back in 2000. What was that? Six?
Whatever it was, I don't know.
2008, and it was a blast.
No, I'm sure the event itself sounds fun.
Anyhow, the events are great, but the game was boring.
Anyway. Perfect. Getting back into what we were actually here for, this is, of course, a podcast. Thank you for joining us this week, as we do record every week, unless things go terribly wrong. But thank you for finding us. Please do subscribe. Please download and listen to us. Also, remember to rate and review the podcast as it helps everyone else find us. You can follow the podcast, if you'd like to, on Twitter, at ScottyJohnnyPod. You can also follow me, at NotSoHumbleHost on Twitter. And Aaron, where do people find you?
I'm still at Cheddar Talk. I have not gotten suspended anytime soon. So Cheddar Talk, cheddar, like cheese talk, like what comes out of your mouth. And I do notice that we're pretty much consistent with our shows through the fall and winter months. I notice that we do tend to get sick around July.
Yeah, I power through generally.
I want to do an hour on baseball again.
Sorry. No, it gets fun. Anyhow, we're going to get everything rolling here right away with what we call our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
Aaron, obviously we spent a long time here in the intro, but getting going here, we're going to start off with the Packers because I think that's obviously just where we generally start if there is a Packer game. Obviously, we had a game this week. Packers got.
I feel like we should talk about it this week because the game went so swimmingly well last week. We barely talked about it.
Yeah. Well, no, this game.
Aaron Rodgers had 6 touchdowns and we spent like 5 minutes on it and we just went.
What's there to break down in that game? The breakdown is last week was Derek Carr fumbled through the end zone that changed the entire game. This week, the big turning point, I have to believe, was the Lancaster forced fumble and fumble recovery. When LeSean McCoy is running with the ball, carrying it like as far away from his body as possible. What I have to assume is a dare.
Not Shady McCoy, but Santa McCoy gave just, Lancaster a gift on the ground last night. That was ridiculous. Here, I'm just going to roll it right into your arms. He had to have no effort. There was no effort by Lancaster. He's like, oh, there's a football in my arms. I better just lay here.
He's the one. You look back at it too. He's like, that was a last ditch effort to try to reach him. He pokes his arm out there and he's the guy who ripped the ball out.
Mm-hmm.
And then he falls after the reach, and the ball's there, and he just reaches out and pulls it in. And you're just like, that was a great play. Changed the outcome of the game dramatically. Right around the midpoint of the game, I mean, we go into halftime, and it looks like just badness is coming because, I don't know, there was a lot of anger and angst on Twitter, obviously, because it was 17-14. And the Chiefs had just scored 17 unanswered points.
Right.
Little we know, they only had one touchdown left in them from that point on. But yeah, they got the ball. I mean, the Chiefs I'm talking about got the ball, had an 8-play drive, got 16 yards and punted. All right. And then the Packers had a 15-play, 72-yard drive, took up 8:33 on the clock. They really changed the way they were playing the offense. They were getting the ball out quickly. It was a lot of rhythm stuff. They were getting the ball out just out of Aaron's hands. They went back to running a little bit more consistently in that second half. They just said, like, look, we can't get in a race with this one. They're going to get up and after us. They're playing back and blitzing. The only way we're going to beat this blitz is to get the ball out of Aaron's hands. Ball came out way faster in the second half. It was clearly a game plan from that point on. The Packers, actually, it's field goal, touchdown, end of game are the four possessions they had in the second half. There were four possessions.
They cleaned it up. And I actually had a – Matt Moore played really well last night, and that's more of a testament to Andy Reid than anybody else. Andy Reid has had very good quarterback play under him because he's Andy Reid. Look what Donovan McNabb did after he left Andy Reid. Nothing. You know, and that's not a shot at Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is a special talent. Yeah. And I will say this too. Brady's going to the Hall of Fame is probably the best ever. Joe Montana's currently the best ever in the Hall of Fame. Bart Starr, all these people, good quarterbacks, but they're not. There's also a lot of great talents out there. Just look out in San Diego. There's a man named Philip Rivers who has never had a good system to work in. He might be the most talented quarterback in the NFL. And that's not a preposterous statement. He might be. Now he's declining now. But, you know, you need a system to work under. So that's not a shot at Mahomes. Mahomes is a great talent. But Matt Moore played very well yesterday because he is trained in the system. And unlike the Packers, who don't like to have good backup quarterbacks, they do. And Matt Moore dropped a couple dimes yesterday that really made – I mean, he was playing the game very well. But it was a mirage because the Kansas City Chiefs were at home. Arrowhead's hard to play in. They were lit last night. That stadium was loud. And Moore played well. The defense was – It all came back around the back end, like you just said. What the final results were on the last couple drives, because the Packers came out hot, then they turned into a steaming pile of S for a little bit, and then they regrouped and they came back. And this is a good thing too, because we've even talked about this in the last couple weeks that the Packers not making good halftime adjustments. Rodgers dropping back for that Hail Mary attempt at the end of the first half was weak at best, but. That's exactly what the Chiefs were doing because they were down three defensive players. They're not a good defense as it was. And it takes a little bit when you're sending nine people every time to figure it out.
They were sending six frequently. Five and six every play.
Zero blitzes nonstop. And you know what? That's a shock to the system because we've talked about this with LaFleur. You've got a set system that you're trying to run. You get that kind of disruption, it's going to throw things off, and it's going to take a little bit of time. And it took them the second half of the first quarter and all the second quarter to adjust to that. And they came out of halftime, and they did great. I was scared. Like, I was like, oh, this is not going to go good. If this does, and they came out after halftime, They adjusted to the blitzes. Now Aaron Rodgers had two of the most ridiculous throws in his career. I would submit that his falling down throw to Jamal Williams in the back corner of the end zone might be his greatest throw ever. And there's, if you go on Twitter and or anywhere on Google, just look it up and say, Aaron Rodgers admires his own throw. As he's walking off the field, Aaron Rodgers is watching himself throw that ball on the big screen, and he's even shocked.
Well, you can see LaFleur in the background, too. They're both watching it together, and they're like, what? You know, just crazy.
Heck.
Yeah.
Just happened there.
I think the big thing was that.
Aaron LaFleur are the best combo ever, too, because LaFleur is, he's a play caller. He was never a player. And Aaron Rodgers, as much as everyone wants to pan him and say that he's a giant, use your words, listeners, but I think that the two of them work out really well together, because as long as things are going well, like they are right now, it's going to work out. Like, he's giving him all the credit. Aaron Rodgers is literally just playing the part, and obviously they're working this offense together, and it looks good. And he comes off the field, he gives Matt LaFleur, he's a good 5 inches taller than Matt LaFleur and probably has 40 pounds on him, gives him big just like Brett. He's starting to resemble Brett Favre. I'm serious. Like, he comes off the field, he's giving butt slaps and chest slaps and stuff like that. Like, he's literally becoming that guy with better accuracy.
Yeah.
And better playmaking.
Less risk taking. But yeah.
I hijacked that entire segment, but I apologize.
Going with where we were talking about, too, the big thing heading into halftime is that we felt like it was getting away, right? Because it was the momentum of it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, it was a 3-point game, but it felt like the Vikings game.
It felt like the Vikings game when we got out 21 to nothing and then just like a fly in the cupboard, just slowly died over the course of the next three periods, but somehow got away with the win.
Yeah, it just that didn't go well, but they only ran 25 plays, it looks like. The Chiefs ran 25 plays in the second half and got one touchdown. Mm-hmm. So it's punt, fumble, touchdown, punt. And the thing that's also disheartening is how quickly some of these plays happen. So there was a 12-play, 89-yard drive that got the Chiefs back into it. That's the one that ended with Kelce's catch where, for whatever reason, a human being decided that Blake Martinez should cover the best tight end in football, or at least one of the top two tight ends in football. There's no help, no safety help, nothing. He's just running around there, and by running, I mean ambling. Just, he's someplace back there, and he has no idea, and he just knows he's not catching him. And he was just saving his energy or something, I don't know. You can't, I like Blake Martinez. Blake Martinez is good at the thing we generally ask him to do, which is stay near the line of scrimmage, tackle anything that comes near you. He's quick. He can get there. He's not fast. He is not fast, and he does not cover.
It doesn't work with the defense, though. He has to be covering it. That's the problem. And actually, when they said that he was good, and everyone take this in the manner in which I say it, I never wish injury on anybody. And these people, this is their livelihood. I hope they do the best. But when they said that he was out, I was kind of actually looking forward to see what they were going to do in place of him for coverage.
I think Burks is the better coverage guy. That's what you're looking at, is he's a better coverage guy, but yeah, he's not going to be, and he's not as experienced, and he doesn't seem to get to the ball quite as well as Blake does up front.
The defense got so, and everyone wants to talk about the fact that they didn't have the offensive linemen and they were missing the defensive players. They still had their entire,
receiving core,
stable of running backs and receiving core. And yes, Tyreek Hill, terrible human being.
Yeah.
Still, that dude he messes up coverages. And they showed it. And I thought they did a really good job last night on Sunday Night Football of showing how he messes up coverages.
Yeah, you got to sit over the top of him. And
you can't single cover him. You cannot. He's too fast.
And Hardman is good, too. I mean, Hardman's got a ton of speed back there. Great, too.
And Kelsey's the best tight end in football now that Gronk's gone.
Well, him or Kittle.
That's right. Kittle is.
They're the only two in that conversation right now, I think.
Yeah, Kittle. Rob Tonyan would be number one if he was not hurt. But Kittle and Kelsey are right up. I mean, 1A and 1B. But, Kelsey, That dude's a beast. And that's the thing is, so you got this speedy wide receiver that's tearing down the field, and it opens it up for everything underneath. And so that's, you know, you're going to give up big plays against Kansas City, is minimizing the damage. That's what New England did to them in the AFC Championship game last year. You just have to minimize the damage.
And that's really what happened in the second half. I mean, there was an 8-play, 16-yard drive, 1 play, 1 yard, and a fumble. The 10-play, 75-yard drive they had, which took almost 5 minutes off the clock. Packers got the ball back and then pulled a Chiefs thing. They had a 2-play, 75-yard drive that took a minute, just under a minute. And then the Chiefs go 6 plays and have to punt. I saw a great tweet on this. I forget the name of the account. It's basically like a surrender factor or whatever. And I retweeted it. If you go to at Not So Humble Host, you'll see it. Basically, they took in the accounting of how much of a surrender it was to punt with that much time left in the game. You know, 5:04 left in the game. They were punting from around midfield on 4th and 3, and they're like, "What? This is asking to lose." They're like, "This is one of the most cowardly plays." They said it was the most cowardly punt of the entire season so far, and like the top 3 most cowardly punts in I think it was like 95th percentile in cowardly punts in the last like 6 years or something crazy like that. I got it though, like. The Packers hadn't, I guess they'd been putting together some good drives there. They had a 15-yard drive, the 5-yard short drive, and then a 2-play touchdown drive. Packers offense had looked good in the second half, but you got to figure, if you don't trust your defense to do that, the game's over anyhow. There was 5 minutes left. They had to just hope they were getting the ball back. If we got the ball back and we were, you know, getting it around midfield with 5 minutes left, the odds that we weren't going to score points, I think, was, you know, making a 2-score game at least was going to be hard for them to win.
And Andy Reid does have some of those tendencies that some of those older coaches still have, and he punted on a 4th and a half yard in the first half too. That was at their own 40 or something like that, right when they just already caught up to the Packers, and it was 14-14, I think.
Yeah, that one was
14-7, and I was just like, "Why are you doing that?" And I was just like, "This is the stuff McCarthy used to do. This is stuff that Sherman used to do. Like, this is stuff that Holmgren used to do. That, like, punt one is 4th and a half yard on the opponent's 40-yard line because we're going to pin them deep." Yeah, and it was like, "No, you're better off just doing it."
So, here again is my death knell for QBR because it's terrible. Matt Moore, 24 of 36. 267 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. He has 107 rating. He had a great game. He played really well for being a guy in that position. I mean, obviously, he's got a ton of weapons, and he understood his job was to get to the weapons. His QBR is 57.7. He's slightly above average. This is why QBR is just terrible. That's the thing, though.
ESPN is terrible. So
yeah, no, it's an ESPN fake stat, and I hate it. It's just super dumb.
ESPN would be dead if Disney didn't buy them. I guess we're not getting picked up by Disney, you know.
I don't think that's right. I don't know about that. They still got it. The thing is it's like the
they're living off the SEC.
They're living off the fact that they are the biggest sports broadcasting network. And if you're going to go somewhere, they're the one that has most of the stories written on the internet. They're the one that have most of the highlights put up on the internet. They own a ton of live broadcasting rights. I mean, the fact that they're the biggest just makes them more likely to be able to get more things that you want to watch anyhow.
Well, it's like everyone goes to Walmart, you know, you just go to Walmart.
Because it's there.
But anyways, so back to the real world. the Smith brothers, they were both down on numerous occasions, a couple of occasions on injuries, but they otherwise played pretty well. Za'Darius Smith he's up there. On just a short, this isn't trying to be preposterous, but just on a short sample, he's up there with Chuck Woodson for best free agent signings. And my God, Aaron Jones is a top 5 running back /non-quarterback talent in this league.
I loved that they had several plays where they specifically designed it to have both running backs in there. You know, like they're going like a 22.
Why not?
Look.
They're both great. Williams is awesome. Williams is He's our second string running back. He could be a starter on a lot of teams. No, they're not Delvin Cook. Yeah. I mean, Aaron Jones is close to Delvin Cook, but still, I mean, they're both awesome. Danny Vitale, sorry you had to come from Northwestern, but some of the blocks that guy threw, oh, man.
Yeah, I think the big thing is, I was also just, if you put Vitale and you put, I don't know, Jones and Williams and Jimmy Graham and Mercedes Lewis in there, and you go to a 32 personnel, and then you put Jones and Williams and Jimmy Graham out wide and Vitale one back in the backfield, you're going to have a ton of linebackers in there. And you could go three wide with that. And it's fantastic because it messes with them. It gives you the matchups. And this league is all about matchups. Putting both those guys in the field at the same time is what the Patriots would do with them. It just is. Putting all three of those guys in the field is exactly what the Patriots would do. They'd get that fullback in there who can run and catch and block. They could put any number of things out there and do that. And you would have to react to it in a way different than what you wanted to do. And the minute you would put corners out there to try to cover it, that's when they would run up your throat.
Right.
It's beautiful.
And the thing that really – the only thing last night – so last night was a touch-and-go game, and so there was nothing I got really mad about. The only thing I got really mad about was on one of the plays, and they highlighted it. One of the plays, Aaron Rodgers did what his biggest weakness is. He had his eyes downfield because that guy's got a cannon for an arm. Danny Vitale did just a little receiver V route and was wide open down the middle, and he ended up hucking it downfield for an incompletion, and Vitale was wide open over the middle.
Yep, I remember that one.
10 yards downfield, and I'm like, dude, you got to get it to that guy. Like, he's going to catch it. Like, and that's the difference between him and Tom Brady. That is literally the difference between Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. Aaron Rodgers has his eyes set to 20 yards plus. Tom Brady has his eyes set from 10 to 30.
10 to 5. Most of the time. His...
5 to 20, you know. So, but that's it. Like, that's Rodgers' biggest weakness. Like, because he knows he can make the throws, so he's always looking way too deep.
Yeah.
And sometimes he misses the underneath stuff. And this is a 3-year gripe for us. Like, we don't.
Yeah. Like, I like seeing his average depth of target go down.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah.
Because we know, Aaron, we know you can throw the 65-yard bomb. We've seen it. Great. Just sometimes, just hit Danny Vitale over the middle, please.
It's a great route. Looked like he was going to flat, took the linebacker out, and then cut back in. Right towards the center of the field, was wide open, running downfield. Well, running diagonally across the field like a slant route. Obviously, not a slant.
Guess what, Broski? If you start hitting those Vitale routes, it's going to open up those 65-yard bomb routes for you.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what they did coming out in the second half. They threw a lot more of the underneath stuff, started doing things. First off, I love the third down pass play that basically ended the game. The 5-yard.
Right.
And it was a good setup, coming in motion, showing the coverage, getting the cornerback out to make sure that there's a good, clean release, coming behind the other receiver and then cutting to the outside, back step, you know, the minute Rodgers plants his foot, he's turning to throw. I mean, it's right off there, perfect timing, and he's wide open. Yeah, end of the game. And we almost had a hilarious ending in Jimmy Graham almost getting, well, flag came out and then was pulled back in. But that would have been, man, Lions fans would have lost their minds having to deal with the reality of Packers getting bad calls sometimes.
Yeah, they all went out back with a shotgun. Hey, so I'm going to make it. Now here comes my preposterous statement. Are you ready for it?
Never.
So here's, I'm not usually a fanboy. I'm kind of like Barrero up in the Twin Cities with the Vikings. I'm not usually a fanboy. I usually take because between the Packers, who have given me two Super Bowls but have broken my heart more than that, and then the Badgers, who have broken my heart more than that every time. They're like the Vikings. No titles. Anyways, so the one thing that is good about this scenario, and the test subject would be the Los Angeles Rams with Sean McVay. Sean McVay being the X factor, and LeFleur being our X factor, is that McVay didn't have a quarterback. He did go out. So much like the Packers did with Pettine, McVay got oh God help me, what's his name?
Bum Phillips. Wade
Phillips. Wade Phillips is a terrible head coach, but he's always been a really good defensive coordinator, right? So and it's kind of the same scenario. So you got this young coach, offensive minded. And then you go get a defensive coordinator because that's not your gig, and let him run the defense. He's just stay away and whatever. The big difference between the Packers and the Rams, though, is that with McVay, there was a suspect quarterback who is now suspect again after one good year. Now on Sunday he was good again, but still, he's not a proven quarterback entity. He has a lot of good weapons around him. He's not good, though. LaFleur has stepped himself into a situation where he's got a really good quarterback, maybe the best ever, arguably. And I'm not a stupid Packers fan. I know that there's arguments either way, but maybe physically the best quarterback ever.
Yeah.
And that's what he's got to run his offense, as opposed to McVay, who had to pull this guy out of Fisher hell and make him a good quarterback again with a lot of things around him. Instead, it's working out well. And I think Pettine, as opposed to Fluffy gray hair out there in Los Angeles, will probably... he's a little bit more flexible, and I think you saw that with Pettine, and because now Pettine has weapons too. He actually has real weapons.
This is why he stopped blitzing, for one thing.
Right. Well, because he doesn't have to.
Yeah, that's why. Yep.
He doesn't have to. Now he can actually, and he's got Jaire Alexander. And yeah, Tremont Williams isn't the best second corner ever, and you know, Savage is still figuring it out because he's a rookie. But, you know, he's got weapons now. He's got actual people that can play defense, and I think this is a good omen for the Packers. And like I said, this is my preposterous homer moment for the week. Like, I think it's okay. I think it's lining up roses for the Packers, because I think Gutekunst got it figured. Boy, my stutter from my childhood came back right there. But I think Gutekunst got it figured out. Like, he figured it out. Like, that's how it is. You know, it's like, you're never the biggest ego on the team is Aaron Rodgers. He's always going to be the biggest ego on the team.
Sure. I think
you just have to manage it.
The biggest last little bit that I want to talk about with this game is that Tremont had that hands to the face that basically kept the Chiefs in a drive and allowed them to come back and tie that game there. And Pride of the Lions, which is an Acme Packing, or it's like Acme Packing. It's an SB Nation website that does a lot of the coverage for the Lions and stuff like that. They immediately go up there like, oh, feels so bad for you. Oh, man, a hands to the call face, and, you know, taking away what should have been a stop. Now you know how I feel. I was like, shut up, man. Nobody on the Packers went to Twitter to complain about that. No, that was the right call. We all knew it was the right call. We were mad at our guy. That's the right call. You can't say anything other than that Tremont put his hands on that guy's face, and you can't do that. It was the right call, and it hurt, mm-hmm. but then we need to not do that. That's the only thing. Okay. Well, it did not get called.
It was a weak call, but it was a call.
And it's the right call.
You deal with it.
You can't be upset about that call. Also, on the play that they had to kick the field goal where Rodgers takes the sack, he is grabbed by the face mask very blatantly, and then tackled. His head is snapped downward, and no call. So, Lions fans, just what's your deal, man? Just
all of 2000. Well, they were Lions fans. They're angry. Yeah, all of 2009.
Yeah, but going back to what you said a little bit ago, yes, the Packers are giving us something.
What was that about missed field goals, by the way?
I don't know. I didn't say anything about missed field.
Did you say a missed field goal?
No.
There was another team that – oh, you didn't say miss – oh, I just heard field goal, and I thought about missed field goals. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Bears fans. Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, gosh.
Sorry.
It's just
sorry
beautiful.
About that. Yeah.
So beautiful. You did mention, too, that the Packers obviously have given us some things, and the Badgers just exist to break our hearts, and that's what happened again this week. The big takeaways I have from this, obviously Ohio State's the better team. We all thought they were going to lose. I'm not exactly happy about how the play went down during the game, but the Badgers were going to lose this, and Ohio State was going to cover. It was a home game for Ohio State. They're the better team overall. They have like the best 10 players you line up anywhere. I mean, that's them, that pretty much. Jonathan Taylor, I mean, where's he been for 2 weeks now at least? J.K. Dobbins went out there and, let's say this, played behind an inferior offensive line to what Jonathan Taylor has and played against a much better defense. Right. That Ohio State defense is no joke, but the Badgers defense is great. And he had a big day because he showed up for that game and he said he wasn't going to get stopped and he made plays happen. He's the best running back in the Big Ten. And it hurts me to say that, but he was better than Jonathan Taylor. He just is at this point.
I'll go to Taylor.
Better
body of work. It's just time and place. I really think that. So after the, because everyone was like, all right, so the Illinois loss is going to wake up Wisconsin and they're going to,
no,
that's the most deflating loss maybe in the last, I forget about how many deflating losses we've had as Wisconsin fans, but that was a pretty deflating loss. To think that they would get up for Ohio State going out to, now maybe if that game would have been played in Camp Randall, it might have been a little bit different. It might have been just because.
Here's the biggest rule of thumb that people seem to forget all the time. They're like, anytime they give you like, oh, it's a close game at halftime, it's very close. You're like, anybody in NCAA, I mean, especially if you get these big schools, like you got Wisconsin who should not have won this game. You get some of these other teams. They can play football with you for a half. If you're the better team, like Minnesota Gophers over the last, other than last year's actual win, the prior 15 years or whatever it was, a lot of times they were with them at halftime. You know, it was like a 3-point game, 7-point game, and then they just walked away from the second half. You can play on emotion for a half of football. Mm-hmm. After
We just talked about that with the Packers Kansas City game. And the thing is, in the NFL, because the talent level is so much closer, it's a much more minuscule level. But
yeah, it's different in the NFL, in
the end, Kansas City had less talent because of injuries, so the Packers ended up walking away with it. It eventually, the talent catches up to where it's at. And so the Packers ended up winning because they had more talent down the line. And yeah, it's the same thing with the Badgers. It was close at halftime, but at the end, Buckeyes have more talent. So, but it's more exponential in college because.
Yeah, I think it's just a big thing that you can stick with a team for a half of football. After a half of football, then it just becomes a team's. You have to bury them if you're the team trying to just hang. And the Badgers looked like they were playing to just hang. It was run on first down. Again, it's just what the Badgers do. They're going to run. And I almost feel like having Jonathan Taylor hinders everything else on this offense. Because I know Chris likes throwing the ball. He's a quarterback. He's had other great quarterbacks before, but he's insistent that he has to get a ton of touches to Taylor. It wasn't working. And he's always running on first down, and then it's always second and long. And it just didn't work that way. It's not doing those things. And I think that he's become too insistent on saying, we have this great running back. We need to make that happen. We need to make this work. If it doesn't work, then we can't win.
He's trying to recruit the next running back. That's why.
But he's got a great quarterback in the stable. Still getting ready and all that. Here's the other thing.
We've talked about this a number of times that half the reason of making Jonathan Taylor a multi-purpose running back is because multi-purpose running backs make it in the NFL. If you're not a university that's willing to have a multi-purpose running back, then you're not gonna get the big ones because the ones that have their eyes set at the NFL. And we said that like week one when the college season started was that you want the Badgers to use Jonathan Taylor like a multi-purpose running back because that's gonna get the next good running back in. And then Jonathan Taylor, should he stick around another year? Heck no. He should get the heck out the door because he gets your money. Get paid because that's going to bring the next Wisconsin running back, great Wisconsin running back in, like Melvin Gordon, James White, Ron Dane. Let's go down the list.
Yeah, Anthony Davis, whatever you want to do. The thing is I'm not talking about that. I think they just keep handing him the ball. They don't use him in the pass game in the last couple of weeks because they just aren't throwing. They aren't bothering to throw. Well, here's the other thing that they're not doing is we have Quintus Cephas and we have wasted him this year. We have Danny Davis. We have Kendrick Pryor. We have – or not Kendrick Pryor. And A.J. Taylor. Those guys are all four. That's four good wide receivers that we have out there we can put on the field at any time. And then the fifth guy is Crookshanks, who's the fastest of all of them. Hey, you want to recruit that next wide receiver, which you know Chris does. You got to do something here because you're going to get the next running back. Why? Because you have forever of history with it. Going back to Alan Amici, we've had running backs. Crazy Legs Hirsch, we've had running backs. You want to get a receiver, which we've had some good ones, but man, you want to run this offense. You need to be able to throw the ball.
I can't say the word, but Chris's world is effed right now because it all got thrown off last week. Like that shot in the mouth they took from Illinois, that wasn't supposed to happen. We talked about this on the podcast last week. Like that was probably so jarring, and which we were just talking about earlier in this podcast was that that wasn't supposed to happen. We were just supposed to roll right through, and Illinois decided to become a big boy D1 school out of nowhere. Thank you, the beard, Lovie Smith. It's kind of like last year, except in reverse order. We just didn't get it this late. You know, we got it early last year.
Well, we had several different ones like that last year. Yeah, the BYU game obviously just kind of threw everything off track, but that's because they just weren't ready. I mean, they had... The biggest thing that's a plus for Chris is that he's unflappable. There's no point that you feel like he is so frustrated with the game that he's quit or that he can't think properly. He is unflappable. He is always calm, and he projects calmness to his players, so none of them freak out. The problem is sometimes you ought to freak out and go do something about it, and they stay so calm through that they allow games like BYU from last year and Illinois this year to happen. And so, yeah, that's just the thing that's killing them right here is that sort of stuff. And, yeah, we have so many good wide receivers and they're not getting the ball. We just aren't finding ways to get to the ball. Cephas really should be getting a lot more playing time or a lot more catches, a lot more targets. Things weren't working well. And this is the other thing. You knew you couldn't hang with Ohio State just kind of hoping it would stay close. I mean, it was 10-7 in the third quarter, right? And you're like, all right, this is going well. You're that team that should get beat. You got to take your shots. And we couldn't take any shots. And the other thing is, maybe once in a while, when they have the best defensive player in the country, you double-team him on a block. They didn't do that once, it felt like. They left Ferguson one-on-one with the best pass rusher in football. And we're surprised that didn't work at all. It was terrible. The game plan didn't seem prepared to play to win, and to not account for Chase Young is an unforgivable sin for football planning. You have to have a plan for him. He's the thing on that defense that beats you. Not just beats you, but destroys you. You have to have a better plan than what the Badgers had this week for him, and they'd better figure things out because Iowa is going to come out next week, and Iowa is going to play for the Heartland Trophy, and they are going to come out prepared, and they're trying to get back on track themselves. They're a tough team at home or on the road, and they're going to not make mistakes. We're going to have to go and take it from them. That's a very good team in Iowa, and we're going to have our hands full.
So, yeah. Kinnick.
Not at Kinnick.
Hey,
at
by
Camp
the way,
Randall.
I just thought of something, by the way. When you were talking about all that, I was going back and thinking about something else, and it was so it's this weird thing now. It's like all the dumb jocks that just go on to become coaches just keep doing the same things over and over and over again. Yet the people that never played football at a level higher than either D3 college or even high school are the ones making waves now because they can actually sit back and look at what's happening and make a difference versus the dumb jocks that just go status quo and they don't I just had like the epiphany. Like, I was thinking about McVay and LaFleur, and I was just thinking about that. Like, they didn't play. Whereas you just said that Chris was a college quarterback, and I remember that with Holmgren and McCarthy and everybody else, like, they're dumb jocks. Like, they just keep pushing it through. Like, they just stay with the status quo. Like, they don't think outside the box. And you were just talking about that with Chris and not getting away from Ron. Like,
well, I mean, he wasn't like the starting. He was a quarterback at Wisconsin. His dad is a coach.
Right,
he's a son of a coach. He's a little different than that. He's not some dumb jock. He's
not saying any of them. I'm just sorry for lack of better term. You know, like, but like, they. I mean, does that make any sense? Like, I'm sorry. It was just kind of an epiphany I just had. Like, it's weird that, you know, people. I mean, I know that Belichick, who is the best coach ever, was a player. I get that. And so a lot of more, and Belichick's been changing and moving how he does things over the years. But, you know,
yeah, and
like,
he did play for, and you remember Lombardi also was one of the seven blocks of granite.
Right. Seven blocks of granite. Yeah, I get that. But like in the modern times now, like how it works, you know, it's, I mean, I know Saban did too. And I just don't know. Like, I mean, maybe that's.
Well, you know that LaFleur played for Saginaw Valley State and then did play for the Omaha Beef and the Billings Outlaws.
I'm sorry. I don't speak that language. What was it? What did you say right there? Sorry.
No, LaFleur played at Saginaw Valley State. And then, whatever the Omaha Beef of the Champions Indoor Football League. Whatever.
I don't know. Maybe that was a very shallow take, but I mean, you know what I was.
There's something like, to be said for the people who grind to be coaches and the people who played because they're athletically talented. Like I said, Reggie White couldn't teach anybody how to do the things he did because he didn't know how he did it. He just did it. Whereas you got to be a guy who had to work for your craft a little bit better trying to coach it. It's kind of like, you know, like there's certain positions and, you know, like Peterson, though, is being innovative and great and doing a very good job, generally speaking. And he was mostly a backup quarterback for most of his career. Right. Got a little chance with Philadelphia to start, but not much more than that. There's something to be said for people who have to grind for what they get and having the ability to teach it rather than just say you were around. So, yeah.
When I lived up in Rhinelander, my next door neighbor was a wide receiver at Rhinelander. And then he went on to Michigan Tech and he was a pretty good wide receiver up there.
The Huskies.
And he tried to go on to coaching after that. And he went up there for engineering and he was just doing coaching as like a lark and whatnot. And he got very, he was disappointed by his coaching, where he could go as a coach, because he's like, oh no, just all the NFL coaches, kids get all the big jobs in the NFL. And I could go coach at some D3 school somewhere, but it's like a fraternity. Like you can't get into the coaching realm at all unless, you know, you have some connection. Yeah. So I don't know. Anyways.
So. Yeah. Well, okay. So as just to try and stay in time here, we are going to get the little bit of Bucks that we had here this last week. Bucks played three games. Giannis, I think he's still averaging a triple double at this point. He had 29, 17 and nine assists.
Did he fall out tonight though?
No, this is the last night in the loss to Miami.
He fouled out in the first game and the second game too. So
yeah, so those two games there, that's 29-17-9. That's against Miami. So he's one basket away from, or one, pardon me, assist away from getting the triple double there. Tonight, Bucks, you know, get a home game against Cleveland, and Cleveland is terrible, and they were hanging around with them for a while. Cleveland was actually winning in the first quarter, but that's just kind of hanging there. Bucks outscored them 29-21 in the second quarter, 32-28, in the third, and then again in the fourth. So they end up with a 129-112 win. Giannis, let's see, he ends up with 14 points, 10 rebounds, and 7 assists in this game. Middleton leads the way with 21 points. 19 points from Hill off the bench, and Connington, 17 points. So yeah, they had seven guys in double digits.
Kind of look good. Kyle Korver looks like a legit addition. So since last week when we had our last podcast, they're opening salvo against Houston. They look great against Houston. It was kind of like tonight's game where it was just one for one the whole way through, but in the end the Bucks end up taking away. John, and I apologize to everybody else, and we're going to get this into the in the final bit here about the blackout rules, the fact that I can't see games, but Giannis ended up falling out in the first game of the year, but the team ended up carrying up at the end, and it looked good winning against the Rockets, and then they lost to the Heat for whatever reason without Jimmy Butler. But tonight, you know, it's the Cavaliers, and it happens. And so, and I promise to our listeners that I'll do much better about Bucks right now. Sorry, the Packers. Last year, when the Bucks were getting hot, the Packers stunk, so it was easy to look at the Bucks. So I'm going to have to divert my attention back and forth now and start keeping up on the Bucks again now. So that I forget how early the NBA season starts.
Well, the big thing is it was frustrating to see that Miami game because the Bucks had a very good record against Miami last year. Well, I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
They did fairly well, if I recall correctly. I think that was one of the teams they had issues.
Yes.
Thank you. That one went fairly well. But, yeah, that's a game they should have won, and they did not get it done. They needed to have Giannis catch a bad three-pointer and put it in as time was expiring just to get to overtime. I don't know. I feel like this team should be better on that guard. It's early, though. They've added some players. They don't have Brogdon. It's a slightly different team. Yeah, they had a preseason, but it's different when they count. So give them time, I guess, and we'll see where we are in December.
Quote of the year goes to my wife so far this Bucks season.
Okay.
She goes, because she watched it through the playoffs with me last year, and she got pretty much into it. She kind of liked it. And she goes, "How did he grow that much hair?" And I'm like,
"Oh yeah, Brooke."
She goes, "There's no way that he grew that much hair between last season and this season." And I was like, "Oh, that's right, because we got the other Lopez."
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
No. Splash Mountain's still over there with short hair, and yeah, that's his brother. She's like, "I can't do this anymore. You just do your sports, and
he's." That hair is ridiculous. It's crazy to look at.
And he's as greasy as his brother is. I love them both. They're awesome.
They're pretty fantastic. I'm glad to see him out there. But
yeah. I mean, you can do whatever else you want with the team. Let's leave the Lopez brothers on the team because they're the Gronk and Gronk's family of the NBA. And
all right. Well, that should do it for our major sports events of this week. We're going to do the last part here, give our kind of final parting shots and some other important news here for Wisconsin in what we call our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
All right, Aaron. So the couple of things that I want to bring up here is that we did have a couple Badgers-related news here. The first one is women's soccer is the regular season Big Ten champion. So those ladies got to celebrate. They got a trophy and everything. So congratulations to women's soccer.
Volleyball. Ladies.
Yep. Women's hockey continues to be ranked number one after they swept Bemidji State, the Bemidji State Beavers this weekend. Men's hockey had a split with Clarkson. They had a tough, I think it was 3-0 was the final, and then came back and beat Clarkson in the Saturday game. So the Badgers dropped one spot. They're now, the men's hockey team is ranked number 7 in the country, one behind now 6th-ranked UMD, the team the Badgers swept last week. Hockey's fun. The couple little things to look ahead to for, now the WIAC and the other leagues around there, the WCHA NCHA, pardon me. The men's hockey stuff came out this week. Pointers will be ranked number 1. St. Norbert's will be ranked number 4. And Eau Claire, UW-Eau Claire is ranked number 11 to start the season. Hockey will start next weekend for Division III, and Point and St. Norbert will play each other. The Pointers and Green Knights are playing each other right away in the first week of the season, 1-4. That's a fantastic matchup and should be a great way to start it. Pointers bringing back a ton of people.
Where's UW-Superior in those rankings?
Oh, they are not.
Oh.
Awesome. Aaron, did you have an update on...
Whenever they become relevant, I'm good friends with their play-by-play, so we could get them on the show.
Well, that'd be fun. That'd be a lot of fun. Yeah. Did you have an update on women's volleyball, Aaron? I didn't see anything from this week, unfortunately.
They won. I'm sorry. You caught me off guard on that one. I didn't expect to have it up. Yes, no, UW volleyball is looking great. They have all the things going for them right now. I'm sorry, John. I don't have it up in front of me right now. Sorry. And a swing and a miss by Flottam.
That's okay. Yeah, they went again. I don't see who they had this weekend. I'm sorry about that one. But
what's crazy is, though, that we're talking about Buffalo Wild Wings. I did catch part of their game the other night, and I don't remember who they were playing, but they were smashing the ball hard.
Yeah.
Good job, UW.
Beat Michigan. Beat Michigan this week. They are now the number 4 ranked team in the country, according to the coaches' poll.
Right.
So and fantastic.
Because when we were at Buffalo Wild Wings, I was watching Nebraska lose, I think.
Wow.
Is what it was. And so that's what it was. So I have to get more into my research about the volleyball stuff. So I'm sorry. I dropped the ball on you there, John.
Well, Nebraska volleyball also suffered a massive loss. A graduate student manager apparently passed away. And I don't know if that had to deal with the team, but they put out a statement, and everybody's feeling just pretty bad for that team. So obviously reaching out to Nebraska fans out there, that's a terrible loss to have to deal with. And so wishing them the best. Final score, the Badgers actually win 3-1 over Michigan, move from number 6 to number 4 in the country this week. Just another great year for Wisconsin sports, especially Wisconsin women's sports. Soccer, hockey, volleyball, just killing it right now.
All I do know is that I was trying to scout out some tickets for because I was going to take Ruby up and let her watch a volleyball game. Because I grew up around volleyball because I'm from a small farm town, and we had 3 state championships in 4 years when I was going through high school. Those girls were awesome. And I was going to take Ruby up to see a volleyball game. And I know UW volleyball is doing well? Their tickets are expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
It's always good to see stuff like that. They play at the old field house, and it's usually you can get the one pass that'll get you to all the games that aren't football, hockey, or basketball and stuff. So that's sometimes a fun way to go, too. The other couple little things here, again, another fun shout-out to the Salty Lions fans who felt the need to talk to the entire world as if we were waiting for them or as if anybody was complaining about the calls in the Packer game. Ken Wisenhunt is fired by the Chargers as offensive coordinator. He's one of the strangest cats in football in my mind. When he was with Tennessee as the head coach, they basically said, we need you to get rid of some of your assistants. And he did the opposite. He said, no, I'm never firing my assistants. They're with me. They come with me. And so they said, all right, cool. We're getting rid of you too then. And as great as it is to stand with your friends and to have the people who came up with you be there with you, if you can't adjust like that, I don't know what you're doing in the NFL.
Dude, that's what I was just talking about with my friend Keith up in Rhinelander. Like, he wanted to be a coach in college and wanted to go into the pros. He's like, it's a dead end.
Yeah, and because that's the thing.
It's fraternity. Like, there's no way in.
And that's why exactly I liked Mike McCarthy, is that right before the Super Bowl, he fired his buddies. Like, the guys who he'd kept with him, he fired them all and said, I'm bringing in Dom Capers. I'm going to change things up. Because I want to win more than I want to just have a job with my buddies. And that's a tough thing to do.
Brought in Don Caper and then didn't fire Don Capers.
When he should have. That's fine. But not a lot of coaches make that call, and Mike McCarthy did. And that's, and I'll tell you, Bill Belichick would fire any human being on God's green earth to win. If it comes to saying that he thinks he can win without Tom Brady next year, Tom Brady's a free agent. He's going to tell him to pound sand if he wants to.
Right. No,
and
Tom
everyone
Brady,
should let him do what he
Putin
wants.
He keeps doing everything he wants to and toes the company line.
Yep.
And yeah, he needs it. Actually, at this point, I think he needs Tom Brady as much as he does. But yeah, otherwise, it's Sergeant Major Belichick is what he is.
Probably
he really
much.
Is. He honestly is.
Strike fear.
But, yeah. He is.
Just putting that in there for you.
But I mean, seriously, like, he's not a colonel. No, he is a sergeant major. Like, he will eliminate anybody he doesn't want to. But yeah, it's you're right.
And he's right. You should do what he says. The one other little thing I'll say before we talk about blackouts.
Patriot apologist over here.
Yeah. Sorry. The one thing I'll say before we get into the blackout games is the Gophers are pathetic. The fact that they had their school write a letter to ESPN saying they needed to be on game day. Why don't you bring College Game Day here? Knowing full well that LSU and Alabama are playing next week. And the fact that they are begging, just begging for it. And first off, to be clear, what they're begging for is to everyone watch as the curtain is pulled back and we see the little man working the levers. Because the Gophers are about to get pointed out as a fraud this week because Penn State's going to roll them. Penn State is going to roll them. And then the Gophers are going to row the boat back to shore and go cry for a little bit. And that's how the Badgers get back into this Big Ten West. Aaron, tell me about blackouts.
Back to what you're just saying, though, is that I'm okay with it because Fleck is a circus master. This is a circus. And they've, after a couple of shaky weeks start, they're at least at a point that they can, you know, they're 13 in the nation. It's 7-13. And it just actually, and you know what? If it wasn't LSU, Alabama this week, game day probably would be in Minnesota this week. But instead, 1-3. So, anyways, but back to blackouts. Blackout rules are old and dumb, and they're stupid, and I hate them. So, I remember when I was a kid growing up on the Minnesota border, listening that Vikings fans could not watch Vikings games on TV because they got blacked out. And we didn't even have a choice in Western Wisconsin. I didn't see the Packers for most of my childhood. And I think that's half the reason why I love them so much. I listened to it with Jim Irwin and Max McGee on the radio. And that's why I think that's where my love came from for the Green Bay Packers, because I grew up 3.5 hours away. I lived an hour away from Minneapolis. I lived 3.5 hours away from Green Bay. Half of my friends were Vikings fans. And I was like most people should realize that, oh, you've never won anything. I'm going to go cheer for that team over on the other side of the state that I live in that has actually won something at some point in recent history. And so that's where that came from. But I do remember Twins games, and this is back when baseball games were on local television too, but blackout games. And it was that unless the Vikings filled the stadium with 80%, was it, John?
I don't remember the number.
It was 75 or 80%. I don't know. Like, facts and figures, I don't care. But you had to fill the stadium with a certain amount of people. Otherwise, the game would be blacked out, and you just couldn't watch the Vikings game on local TV. And in order to force people to go to the stadium and buy tickets to watch, well, the problem with that is that stadium, when it was a Metrodome, only held 65,000 people. You have a local populace that is about 2.5 million people. You can't put 2.5 million people in your stadium. And now I fast forward this to 2019, where I'm living down in Janesville, and I have NBA ticket, and I can't watch the Bucks play because I am in the Bucks blackout zone in order to force me to go buy a ticket. I can't afford 4 tickets for 82 games. As a matter of fact, the Bucks are sold out for the rest of the year. And I understand that 5 years ago, the Bucks weren't a sellout ticket. But at the same time, NBA, what the hell are you doing? You're alienating all of us. I can't watch the Bucks on local TV. And because I'm a sling person, I can't watch them on FSN North anymore because that's out of the question. I have no way to watch the Bucks game. I had to watch the highlights of the Bucks. That's the reason why my Bucks highlights suck tonight, because I couldn't watch them. There's no way for me to watch the Bucks.
Yeah. I think the big thing there is just that it's like when you have those things, you pay to get this Sunday ticket or you pay to get whatever else, and they're like, no, you live locally. You should go see the game or you should watch it in some other thing. You're like, yeah, but I can't see it locally because I don't have this, or you know, like it's not showing on whatever. It's not always on. Not like in the days when, you know, we had three channels. You know, it's like, yeah, it's on NBC.
Why the hell is MLB baseball and NBA not on on-air TV within local markets?
I don't know. Yeah, I remember.
Why the hell? I'm sorry, I got away from the heck because we're at the end of the show now. Why the hell is it not on easily accessible? I mean, you want to make money? Make it easily accessible.
You know what would be really easy is the NFL should just make its own network, and then they could just stream it. They don't even have to have you pay for it because the ads that would be on that one channel would be ridiculous.
I think that's what the NFL is trying to do with that Twitter bit last year and now Amazon now.
No, because they keep trying to sell it to somebody else to do. The thing is, I guess they don't have the infrastructure to start off with.
Right.
But if they just put in place the infrastructure, just film every game, then put the cameras in every stadium.
The worst part is,
and do it.
The worst part is that the NFL is the most antiquated league, and they're going to be the first one to fall. So,
no.
No, I'm just saying. I really am. We've talked about that on this podcast before. Yeah. I honestly think that the NFL it's the worst. That's what kills me about the fact that the NBA has blacked out games on their own channel. I can't watch the Bucks on the NBA ticket because I'm blacked out because I live within a county of Milwaukee.
Well, it's because they've sold.
It's the most progressive.
They've sold the thing to FSN North or FSN Wisconsin. They sold it to them. They have the rights to show it. They're like, no, we want people watching our broadcast. Don't let the people buying your thing buy it locally, because the local people need to watch our commercials. That's why they do that.
That's okay. I'm done with the NBA anyways. The NBA hates free speech.
Cool. Anyhow, that'll be the last bit that we have for this week. We'll leave you with thoughts of, you know, God bless America and all of those wonderful things, and say that, of course, you can follow the show at Scotty Johnny Pod. You can follow me on Twitter, of course. You can follow me at Not So Humble Host. You can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk. You can find our show at ScottyJohnny.com. And, of course, you can find us at our Facebook page if you'd like to follow us there. And the other thing to remember is to, of course, subscribe, download, rate, and review us. Share us with your friends and family. And whether you are on the town or on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.
Our friends at Bellagers are like, you guys have so much music.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening.